Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Newsroom Butcher, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Breaking News, Breaking Rules. They say the news is about truth. I say the news is about control. No one tunes in for cold, dry facts. The public doesn't care about policy debates or economic reports. They crave carnage. They want to be gripped by fear, to feel the world unraveling around them. They need a villain, a monster lurking in the dark, a reason to clutch their loved ones tighter at night. And that's where I come in. I don't report the news. I create it. My name is Dylan Mercer, and I am the undisputed king of primetime television. The face America trusts, the voice that fills living rooms across the country, whispering nightmares into their ears and shaping their perception of reality. For years, I've mastered the art of storytelling under the guise of journalism. I know what makes people tick, what keeps them glued to their screens, what fuels their paranoia. Fear. Fear is the most powerful drug ever created. More potent than any opioid, more addictive than any substance mankind has ever consumed. Fear makes people watch, makes them beg for more, makes them crave every grim detail. And I supply that fear in carefully measured doses, ensuring that our ratings stay high and our network remains the go-to authority on everything terrifying in the world. I've turned tragedy into a brand. But no story, no segment, no tragic event has ever matched what I orchestrated for the Midtown Massacre. It started as an experiment, a test to see just how far I could go, how much I could fabricate before the world caught on. The concept was simple. A lone gunman storms a quiet cafe in Midtown, opens fire, and leaves a city in mourning. 14 dead. 7 wounded. Survivors traumatized. Families devastated. Politicians up in arms. Social media ablaze with debates and outcries. But there was no shooter. There was no crime scene. There was no cafe littered with bullet casings, no bloodstained floors, no crying witnesses clutching each other in despair. I made it all up. Every image that flashed across the screen, stock photos, the police statements, taken from past incidents, the security footage of a suspect fleeing the scene, edited from an unrelated robbery, the grief-stricken mother who sobbed into our microphones, telling the world how she had lost her son in the attack, an actress, paid under the table, coached to perfection, delivering the performance of a lifetime. It was a beautiful lie, and it worked flawlessly. The newsroom was electric the night we broke the story. Phones rang off the hook. Social media erupted. My name was everywhere. Dylan Mercer delivers the most gripping, emotional, and in-depth coverage of the Midtown tragedy. A true journalist at the top of his game. We need stricter gun laws now. Mental health reform is a must. Every debate, every argument, every think piece analyzing the so-called massacre, it all led back to me. The network executives were ecstatic. Our ratings shot through the roof, crushing every competing network. Advertisers lined up to pay premium prices for a slot during my segment. The higher-ups called me a genius. My colleagues either worshipped me or resented me. I had become the golden boy of televised horror, the puppet master behind America's collective hysteria. And best of all, no one questioned a damn thing. Not a single cop, not a single journalist, not a single fact-checker dug deep enough to see through the illusion. They took the bait, swallowed every fabricated detail whole. The public was too busy being afraid to realize that their fear was built on nothing. I felt invincible. Until he showed up. The first email arrived at exactly 3:47 a.m. No subject line. No sender information. Just a single video attachment. I almost ignored it, chalking it up to one of the countless conspiracy theorists who flooded my inbox with nonsense. But something about this one felt different. A strange unease settled in my chest as I clicked play. The screen flickered to life. The footage was grainy, bathed in eerie night vision green. The shaky camera panned to a gas station, its fluorescent lights flickering against the darkness. A man stood in front of the store. Tall, thin, wearing a black ski mask. His voice was a raspy whisper, distorted through a cheap microphone. "You inspired me." My stomach clenched. The camera tilted, revealing the inside of the gas station. Bodies, slumped over the counter, sprawled across the floor, pools of blood spreading beneath them. A woman, barely alive, gasped for air near the drink coolers, her fingers twitching. A child's tiny sneaker was drenched in red. The security camera above the register flickered as a body convulsed one final time. A real massacre. A real body count. And it had my fingerprints all over it. The masked man stepped closer to the camera. The Midtown Massacre wasn't real. He tilted his head, as if smiling beneath the mask. "But it will be." The video ended. I stared at the screen, my pulse pounding so hard I could feel it in my throat. My mouth was dry, my hands trembling as I sat there in the dim glow of my laptop. What the fuck had I done? I didn't sleep that night. I couldn't. The faces of those bodies, those real bodies, haunted me every time I closed my eyes. It was one thing to manipulate the public, to fabricate fear for the sake of television. But this was different. This was real blood. This was a real killer who had taken my fiction and turned it into reality. And worst of all, he wasn't finished. He wanted more. And he wanted me to be part of it. Chapter 2, Blood on My Hands. I didn't leave my apartment for 3 days. I couldn't. Every time I tried to step outside, I felt exposed, as if there were 1,000 eyes watching me, waiting for me to make a move. The email replayed in my mind on a vicious loop. That masked face burned into my thoughts. "You inspired me." The words made my skin crawl. I had spent years manufacturing fear, carefully crafting the illusion of chaos. But this was real. For the first time in my career, I wasn't controlling the narrative. The story was controlling me. I sat in front of my laptop, staring at the email. I had watched the video 26 times. Each time, my stomach churned. Each time, I convinced myself there was a way out. Maybe it was fake. Maybe it was some twisted prank, an elaborate deepfake meant to fuck with me. I wanted to believe that. I needed to believe that. But deep down, I knew better. I had spent years fabricating fear, but I knew real terror when I saw it. The shaky footage. The muffled screams. The raw, unfiltered panic in that woman's final moments. This was no hoax. This was my monster stepping out of the shadows. And it had my name written all over it. The newsroom was buzzing when I walked in. Phones ringing. Producers shouting across the floor. Monitors flashing breaking news banners. The Midtown Massacre had dominated the news cycle for days, and my bosses were still riding the high of our unprecedented ratings. I could feel their eyes on me as I passed, admiring, jealous, envious. They had no idea I was drowning. I made my way to my desk, barely hearing my assistant, Riley, as she rattled off updates. Something about another interview request, a roundtable discussion with a panel of experts, a primetime special focused on gun violence in America. "Dylan," Riley's voice cut through my thoughts. "You okay?" I forced a smile. "Yeah, just running on no sleep." She hesitated, her sharp green eyes scanning my face. "I can get you some coffee." "No, I'm good." Lie. I wasn't good. I was falling apart. I sat down, logged into my email. And there it was. Another message. The subject line this time. "We're just getting started." I hesitated before clicking. My palms were sweaty, my fingers trembling slightly as I opened the email. No text. No explanation. Just another video. I swallowed hard and pressed play. The footage was clearer this time. The same masked figure, standing in front of a new location, a subway station. "Last time, you didn't cover it." His voice was eerily calm, deliberate. "I won't make that mistake again." He stepped aside, and my blood turned to ice. The subway platform was a war zone. Bodies slumped against walls. Pools of dark crimson glistening under the harsh fluorescent lights. A security officer sprawled face down, his gun still holstered, his head caved in from what looked like a blunt force impact. A woman's hand twitched, her breath raspy and shallow as she struggled to hold on to life. The camera zoomed in on a message scrawled in blood on the tiled wall. Breaking news. My stomach lurched. I could barely hear my own breathing over the pounding in my ears. The masked man turned back to the camera, tilting his head slightly. "I gave you the story." He stepped closer, voice lowering to a conspiratorial whisper. "Now give me my credit." The screen went black. My entire body went numb. My mind refused to process what I had just seen. Another massacre. More bodies. And this time, he wanted a byline. I couldn't move. I sat there frozen, staring at my screen as the newsroom buzzed around me, completely oblivious to the fact that I was seconds away from losing my fucking mind. Then, bing, another email. I swallowed thickly and clicked. From, unknown sender. Subject, what's the headline, Dylan? Message, don't ignore me. You know how this works. We need a narrative. We need a villain. Make me famous. My breath came out shaky. He was watching me. Somewhere, somehow, he knew I had received his message. He was expecting a response. And if I ignored him, more people would die. I grabbed my phone and hurried into the bathroom, locking myself inside a stall. My hands were shaking so badly that I could barely type. I didn't know who to call. The police? What the fuck would I say? Hey, I faked a mass shooting for ratings, and now a real killer is using it as a blueprint. Help. No. That wasn't an option. If this got out, I wouldn't just be fired, I'd be crucified. My career, my reputation, my entire existence would be erased overnight. And yet, people were dying. Because of me. I opened my messages, scrolled through my contacts, and hovered over one name, Ethan Calloway. An old friend. An investigative journalist who had spent the last decade exposing corruption. We hadn't spoken in years. Not since I sold out for the glitz of television while he stayed knee-deep in real reporting. I hesitated for a second. Then, before I could talk myself out of it, I hit call. It rang twice before he answered. Dylan. His voice was groggy, irritated. It's fucking 6 a.m., man. You better be calling to confess to a murder or something. I exhaled sharply. It's worse. A pause. Then, where are you? I closed my eyes. Meet me at McCready's in an hour. Another pause. Then a sigh. Jesus. Fine. I hung up and gripped the sink, staring at my pale, hollow-eyed reflection in the mirror. The Midtown Massacre had started as a hoax. But now it was real. And I had just dragged someone else into it. Chapter 3. A Deal with the Devil. I sat at a corner booth in McCready's, a dingy, dimly lit bar that reeked of old bourbon and broken dreams. The kind of place where people came to forget about their debts, their mistakes, their regrets. Perfect. My leg bounced under the table as I gripped my whiskey glass, staring at the half-melted ice cubes, my mind spinning at a million miles per hour. Ethan would be here soon. And when he showed up, I had to convince him to help me without giving him too much. I needed information, guidance, a way to control the situation before it spiraled further out of my hands. Because right now, I wasn't just standing at the edge of a cliff. I was dangling off the fucking side, barely holding on. The Midtown Massacre had been a lie. But now, people were actually dying. And the killer wanted me to tell his story. My fingers clenched around my glass as I swallowed back the urge to scream. I had built an empire on fear, manipulated the public, fabricated tragedy after tragedy to drive ratings. But now I had no control. This wasn't a story I could edit in post. This was real blood, real bodies, real consequences. I ran a shaky hand through my hair and checked my phone. No new emails. No texts. No updates from my anonymous admirer. But he was out there. Watching. Waiting. A shadow moved at the entrance. Ethan. He stepped inside, shaking off the early morning drizzle, his sharp eyes scanning the room until he spotted me. I waved him over. Jesus Christ, Dylan, he muttered, sliding into the booth across from me. He looked exactly the same, except a little more tired, a little more worn down by the world. His beard was scruffier, his brown leather jacket more tattered, but his eyes? Still sharp as ever. The eyes of a man who didn't miss a thing. He flagged down the waitress, without even looking at the menu. Coffee. Black. She nodded and walked off. Then he turned back to me, leaning forward on his elbows, his expression unreadable. All right. Spill. I exhaled. I had rehearsed this a dozen times in my head on the drive over. But now, sitting here, with him staring at me like he could see right through my soul, my brain short-circuited. Ethan frowned. Dylan. I need your help, I said, my voice lower than I intended. No shit. You look like you haven't slept in a week. I haven't. His brows furrowed. What's going on? I hesitated. I couldn't tell him the full truth. If I admitted what I had done, that I had fabricated the Midtown Massacre, he would walk out of this bar and straight into the newsroom of a rival network. He'd expose me before I even had a chance to explain myself. So I had to be smart. I had to lie. Just a little. There's a guy, I said. A psycho. He's been sending me messages. Ethan raised an eyebrow. Messages. I nodded, pulling out my phone, my hands still shaking slightly as I navigated to the emails. I slid it across the table, my heart hammering against my ribs as he picked it up and read. His face didn't change. Not at first. Then his jaw tightened, his fingers gripping the phone just a little harder. He scrolled. Watched the videos. And then, very slowly, he placed my phone back on the table, his eyes locked onto mine like a laser. You're telling me someone is out there committing real shootings? Because of your reporting? My throat felt dry. Yeah. He sat back, running a hand down his face. Christ. I don't know what to do. That part was the truth. I really didn't. Ethan sighed, his fingers tapping against the table. Then he glanced around, lowered his voice. Dylan, he said slowly. If this guy's real, if he's actually doing this because of your stories, you need to go to the cops. I can't. His eyes narrowed. Why the fuck not? I hesitated. Careful. Careful. I can't. Not yet. Ethan studied me for a long moment, and I could practically see the gears turning in his head. He knew I was leaving something out. But he didn't push. Not yet. Instead, he asked, has he asked for anything? Money. Favors. I shook my head. No. Just credit. Ethan frowned. Credit. He wants me to report on it. To make him famous. Ethan swore under his breath. You're dealing with a fucking narcissist. A guy who wants the world to see him. That's dangerous. I know. You can't give him that, Dylan. The second you start feeding into his ego, he's gonna escalate. Guys like this? They don't stop. They always want more. I already knew that. And yet, if I ignored him, more people would die. So what the hell do I do? I asked, my voice raw. Ethan was silent for a long time. Then finally he said, we need to trap him. I blinked. What? Ethan leaned in. If this guy wants to be famous, we use that against him. Give him the illusion that he's getting what he wants. But on our terms. I stared at him. You're talking about baiting a serial killer. He shrugged. Welcome to journalism. I exhaled, rubbing my hands down my face. This is fucking insane. It's the best shot you've got. A pause. Then. Unless, of course, there's something you're not telling me. My stomach twisted into knots. I forced myself to meet his gaze, pushing every ounce of my training into acting normal. No, I said. That's it. Lie. He studied me for a long moment. Then he nodded, sipping his coffee. All right. Let's catch ourselves a killer. Chapter 4, The Devil's Bargain. The rain poured like a relentless curse, hammering against the city streets, drenching everything in a murky film of cold and filth. I sat in my car across from the newsroom, staring at the glow of the high-rise windows, my fingers clenched around the steering wheel like it was the only thing keeping me tethered to reality. Ethan's plan was insane. And worse, it was the only shot I had. We were about to bait a killer. And all it would take was one story. One perfectly crafted headline. One invitation for him to step into the light. One reckless, desperate move that could either expose him or send more bodies to the morgue. I was about to walk a razor's edge, and if I made the wrong step, if I miscalculated, if I didn't play my part perfectly, this psychopath would tear me apart like an animal. But I had no choice. Because if I didn't give him what he wanted, he would keep killing. And worse, he would keep killing in my name. I pushed open the heavy newsroom doors, stepping into the artificial glow of the studio, where chaos was a permanent fixture. Phones rang off the hook. Producers barked orders. Interns scurried like ants, balancing stacks of notes and coffee cups, their faces lined with exhaustion. At the center of it all, sitting at my desk, was Riley, her fingers flying across the keyboard as she prepped the next segment. She looked up the moment she saw me. You look like shit. Feel like it too. Where the hell have you been? People have been asking about you all morning. I swallowed the knot in my throat. Just had to handle something. Riley frowned. Dylan, she said carefully, lowering her voice. The network is already planning a Midtown one-month memorial special. They want you to lead it. Big sponsors. Primetime slot. They're saying it's going to be the highest-rated special of the year. I exhaled slowly. Of course they were. The network didn't give a damn about the truth. They never did. They only cared about selling tragedy like a goddamn blockbuster film. I forced a nod. We'll talk about it later. Dylan. Later. Riley hesitated, then nodded, turning back to her screen. I walked past her, moving through the sea of reporters and producers, each one oblivious to the fact that I was about to start playing with fire. I reached my office, locked the door behind me, and pulled up my laptop. It was time to write the most dangerous story of my life. Headline: A City in Fear. Is the Midtown Massacre killer still out there? I stared at the words, my pulse pounding in my throat. The Midtown Massacre wasn't real. But he was. I started typing. Carefully. Deliberately. Every word had to be perfect. Authorities have yet to release the full details of the man responsible for last month's shocking Midtown Massacre. But whispers have surfaced. Rumors of a ghost in the city's underbelly. A killer who remains unseen, unheard, yet ever present. Is it possible that this phantom figure walks among us? Waiting. Watching. Choosing his next moment to strike? The words felt poisonous. I was writing fiction, baiting a real killer with the same tactics I had used to manipulate the public 100 times before. But this wasn't about ratings. This was about control. I was trying to trap him. To lure him in. But there was a part of me that knew deep down, this was exactly what he wanted. I emailed the piece to the network under a pseudonym. Anonymous tip. Within an hour, it was published. Within 2 hours, it was viral. Twitter, Reddit, Facebook, every social media platform exploded with speculation. The Midtown Phantom? The killer they never caught. Holy shit. What if he's still out there? This is insane. Is the media hiding something from us? The public devoured it. And I fucking knew, that he was watching. At exactly 3 a.m., my phone buzzed. Unknown number. My stomach turned to ice. I answered. Silence. Then, a whisper. Beautiful work, Dylan. I closed my eyes. My grip on the phone tightened. He was biting. He had taken the bait. Now I just had to survive it. Chapter 5. When the devil calls, you answer. The night after Kane's call, I didn't sleep. I couldn't sleep. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the bodies in that gas station. The subway massacre. The way the blood pooled on the tile floor. Soaking into the grout like it belonged there. And now, I was standing at the edge of something even worse. He wanted to meet me. No screens. No phones. No cameras. Face to face. The thought alone sent a shudder down my spine. I had spent my entire career behind a desk, controlling the world from the safety of a studio. I had told stories, shaped narratives, manipulated public perception like a goddamn puppeteer. But now, I was about to step into the fire. And I had no idea if I'd make it out alive. 4:15 a.m., the plan. I met Ethan at an all-night diner on the outskirts of the city. The kind of place where the coffee was strong enough to strip paint off a car, and the waitresses had been working the graveyard shift for 30 years. Ethan was already there when I arrived, nursing a steaming mug, his eyes shadowed with exhaustion. He looked up as I slid into the booth across from him, his expression tight with something between frustration and concern. Tell me you're not actually considering this, he said without preamble. I exhaled. I don't have a choice. The hell you don't. He leaned forward, lowering his voice. Dylan, this isn't some goddamn politician you're exposing. This isn't a scandal or a hit piece. This is a fucking murderer. A psychopath who's been killing in your name. And now he wants to meet you. That doesn't raise 1,000 red flags in your head. I ran a hand through my hair, my fingers shaking. Of course it does. Then tell me why the hell you're doing this. I hesitated. Because I had created him. Because this was my fault. Because I had spent my entire career profiting off of fear. And now, fear had come knocking. I looked Ethan in the eye. If I don't go, he keeps killing. Ethan let out a slow, measured breath. And if you do go, he kills you. Silence stretched between us. Finally, I said, then I need a plan. Ethan swore under his breath, rubbing his temples. Jesus Christ. I can't believe I'm saying this, but fine. You want to do this? Then we do it right. I swallowed hard. I'm listening. He grabbed a pen from his jacket pocket and scribbled something on a napkin. Rule 1, you don't go alone. I'll be nearby, he said. Somewhere hidden. If shit goes sideways, I step in. I nodded. Rule 2, you wear a wire. He pulled a small, high-tech recording device from his pocket. This thing is top of the line. Law enforcement grade. Small enough to hide in your clothes, sensitive enough to pick up whispers. I took it from him, turning it over in my hands. You think he'll check me for one? Ethan's expression was grim. If he's smart, yeah. But if he's cocky, he might not think he needs to. I nodded. Rule 3, you control the narrative. You're a journalist, Ethan said. Use it. You make people talk for a living. Make him talk. Get him to confess. Get him to slip up. Whatever you do, don't let him take control of the conversation. I clench my jaw. And if I can't? Ethan's gaze darkened. Then you stall for as long as you can. I didn't ask what happened after that. We both knew the answer. 5:30 a.m., the meeting place. Kane's message came an hour later. Midnight. Warehouse district. Come alone. No details. No extra instructions. Just a time and a place. I stared at the screen for a long moment, my heartbeat hammering in my ears. Ethan looked over my shoulder. Fucking knew it, he muttered. I exhaled slowly, then typed back two words. I'll be there. 11:45 p.m., the warehouse district. The city was quiet this time of night. Not the kind of quiet that felt peaceful, but the kind that felt unnatural. A silence that settled over the streets like a suffocating blanket, pressing down on everything, waiting for something to snap. I parked three blocks away. Ethan was in position, tucked away in the shadows of an abandoned loading dock, watching through binoculars. I stepped out of the car, pulling my coat tighter around me as I walked toward the warehouse. My palms were slick with sweat. The wire was secured inside the lining of my jacket. I approached the entrance, an old, rusted metal door hanging slightly off its hinges. The air smelled like oil and decay. I swallowed hard, my throat dry as sandpaper. And then, I stepped inside. 12 a.m., the devil's smile. The inside of the warehouse was cavernous, filled with the skeletal remains of old machinery and towering metal beams that stretched toward the ceiling like the ribs of some long-dead beast. Dim, flickering fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. And then, he stepped out of the shadows. Kane. Tall. Slim. Dressed in black. His mask was gone. And his smile was the worst thing I'd ever seen. It wasn't wide, or manic, or exaggerated like a movie villain. It was calm. Controlled. Patient. Like he had already won. Dylan Mercer, he said, his voice smooth, almost friendly. We finally meet. I kept my expression neutral, hiding the racing of my heart. You wanted a meeting, I said. I'm here. Kane exhaled, shaking his head like he was amused. See, that's what I love about you, Dylan. You understand the performance of it all. He took a slow step forward. I mean, think about it, he continued. You and I, we're not so different. We both create a narrative. We both know that the world eats up fear like candy. The only difference. He smiled. I give them something real to be afraid of. I clenched my fists. You think this is a game? Kane tilted his head. You tell me. Then he pulled out his phone, tapped the screen, turned it toward me, and my entire world collapsed. The video. It was a live feed. A dimly lit room. A chair in the center. A man tied to it. Beaten. Bloodied. Barely conscious. And then I saw his face. And my breath stopped. Ethan, I whispered. Kane grinned. Recognize him? I stumbled back a step. My mind reeled, my chest tightening with panic. Kane chuckled. Oh, don't look so surprised. You knew this was a trap. I clenched my jaw. What do you want? Kane's eyes burned with something dangerous. I want you, he murmured, to make me famous. And then, he tossed me a gun. It landed at my feet with a dull, metallic clatter. I stared at it, then at Kane, then at Ethan, and I realized there was no way out. Not anymore. Chapter 6, A Loaded Gun and a Loaded Truth. The gun lay at my feet, the cold steel catching the dim, flickering warehouse light. The sound of it hitting the concrete floor still echoed in my ears, sharp and final, like a judge's gavel slamming down to deliver a death sentence. My hands were shaking. My breath came in ragged, uneven pulls. Ethan, beaten, bound, and barely breathing, sat slumped in a chair on Kane's live feed, his head drooping forward, a thin stream of blood trickling from the corner of his mouth. I had walked into this thinking I had some level of control, that I could be the one setting the trap. But Kane had flipped the entire game board over, scattering the pieces, leaving me with no winning moves left to play. Kane, standing just a few feet away, his expression unreadable, tilted his head slightly, his voice smooth as silk. Go ahead. Pick it up. My stomach turned to ice. I stared at him, at the calm certainty in his eyes. He had planned this. He had planned every second of this. This was all part of his design, his performance, his carefully orchestrated symphony of chaos. And now, he was making me part of the act. I didn't move, didn't breathe, didn't dare blink. Because I knew, the second I picked up that gun, I crossed a line I could never uncross. Kane sighed, taking a slow step forward, his boots clicking against the floor. You know, Dylan, he mused, I really expected more from you. I clenched my jaw, swallowing the lump in my throat. What the hell do you want from me? He smirked. Oh, Dylan, you already know. He gestured to the gun. I want you to pull the trigger. A heavy, suffocating silence stretched between us. You're out of your fucking mind, I spat. Kane chuckled. No, no, no. See, that's where you've got it all wrong. He bent down slightly, his fingers brushing over the gun as he picked it up and offered it to me again, this time placing it gently in my hand. I flinched at the weight of it, my fingers trembling around the grip. You're not here because of me, Dylan. His voice was low, steady, dripping with control. You're here because of you. I forced myself to breathe. You killed those people, I growled. Kane smiled. And you told the world my story. His voice dropped to a whisper. You made me, Dylan. I squeezed my eyes shut, my grip tightening around the gun. Why, Ethan? I choked out. Kane exhaled, feigning disappointment. You still don't get it, do you? I didn't answer. Didn't trust myself to speak. You think you're a journalist, he continued, circling me like a predator playing with its food. That your job is to report the news. But that's bullshit. His voice turned razor sharp. You don't report the news, Dylan. You create it. I sucked in a sharp breath. You wanted the Midtown Massacre to be real. You fed the fear. You built the story. You fueled the hysteria. And now, he grinned, now you have your very own real-life killer. I felt sick. You're insane, I whispered. Kane shrugged. Insane? No. Honest? Yes. He took another step forward, his presence looming. You and I were storytellers. The only difference is, I make my stories real. The video feed flickered. I snapped my head toward the phone, my heart stopping cold. Ethan was shifting in the chair, his eyes barely open, his mouth moving just slightly. Kane followed my gaze. Huh, he mused. Guess he's not dead yet. The yet hung in the air, suffocating. I took a slow, careful step forward. If you let him go. Kane let out a sharp laugh. Oh, Dylan. You don't negotiate from a position of weakness. His expression darkened. You make a choice. He gestured toward the phone. You can save him. A pause. Then he pointed to the gun in my hand. Or you can make history. My stomach twisted. What the hell does that mean? Kane grinned. You want the biggest story of your life? A step closer. You want to truly own the news cycle? Another step. You want to cement your place in history? His smile was sharp. Kill him. My blood ran cold. What? I croaked. Kane's eyes gleamed. Kill your best friend, Dylan. Right here. Right now. And I promise you. He leaned in, voice a whisper. The world will never forget your name. I staggered back, the weight of the gun feeling heavier than anything I had ever held in my life. This was it. This was the moment he wanted. The moment where I broke. Where I crossed the threshold and became the monster he saw in me. I could feel the heat of his breath, the electric hum of his presence, the sickening weight of the choice pressing down on my chest like a vice. I looked at the gun, then at Ethan, then at Kane, and I made my decision. The gunshot rang out, splitting the night in half. Kane staggered backward, his expression twisting from triumph to shock. He clutched his leg, blood seeping through his pants, his mouth opening slightly, no words, just a stunned exhale. I had shot him. Not in the head. Not in the heart. But enough to stop him. His grip on his phone slackened, the device clattering to the floor. I launched for it. My fingers closed around the screen, and before he could react, I ended the live feed. Kane let out a low, guttural growl, staggering to his feet. You. I didn't let him finish. I grabbed a rusted metal pipe from the ground and swung it as hard as I could. It connected with his temple. The sound was sickening, flesh and bone colliding, his body crumpling to the floor like a puppet with its strings cut. For a moment, all I could hear was my own ragged breathing. Then I moved. I ran. Through the warehouse. Through the alley. My heart slamming against my ribs as I sprinted through the dark streets. I didn't stop until I reached Ethan. He was barely conscious, his lips cracked, his breathing shallow. But he was alive. I untied him with trembling hands, my fingers slick with sweat. We're getting out of here, I whispered. I swear. Ethan's eyes fluttered open slightly. He looked at me. And then, in a voice barely above a whisper, kill that motherfucker. Chapter 7, The Final Broadcast. I barely had time to think. Ethan's words, kill that motherfucker, still rang in my ears, a violent, pulsing beat that matched the adrenaline slamming through my veins. Kane was still on the warehouse floor, bleeding, but he wasn't dead. Not yet. And that was a problem. Because if I left him alive, he'd come back. He'd come back for me. For Ethan. For everyone. And worse, he'd come back with a story of his own to tell. I didn't have time to weigh the morality of it. Didn't have time to question whether I could live with myself afterward. Kane had to die. It was that simple. And I had to be the one to do it. The decision. I turned back toward the crumpled heap of a man lying on the concrete floor. Kane groaned, his breathing ragged, his leg drenched in blood where I had shot him. He had one hand pressed against the wound, the other dragging across the floor, searching for something. A weapon. A way out. I didn't care. I wasn't going to let him find it. I took slow, careful steps toward him, gripping the metal pipe so tightly my knuckles ached. My vision tunneled. I saw nothing but him. This man. This thing I had created. He wasn't just a serial killer. He was a consequence. The direct result of every lie I had ever told, every story I had ever fabricated, every panic-driven headline I had ever orchestrated to boost my career. I had built my life on fear. And now, fear was bleeding out in front of me. "You're not getting out of here," I said. Kane laughed. A weak, breathy chuckle, like he was still enjoying the joke, even now. Even after everything. "You really think you can kill me?" he murmured. His voice was weaker now, but his eyes were still sharp. Still dangerous. I didn't hesitate. I swung the pipe. Kane's last stand. The impact cracked against his ribs, a sickening thud that sent him rolling onto his back. He coughed violently, spitting blood onto the floor. I gritted my teeth. Swung again. This time, the pipe connected with his arm, a sickening crunch echoing through the warehouse. Kane let out a strangled gasp, but the smile never left his lips. "That all you got, Dylan?" he rasped. I raised the pipe again. And then, too fast, too sudden, Kane moved. His hand shot toward his pocket, yanking out a blade, a glint of steel flashing in the dim warehouse light. I barely had time to react. I stumbled back as the knife sliced through the air, missing me by inches. Kane used the moment to scramble up onto his knees, breathing hard, smiling through the pain. "You're not a killer," he taunted. "You just play one on TV." I clenched my jaw. "Maybe," I said. Then I kicked him in the face. His head snapped back with a sickening crack, his body sprawling onto the floor once more. I was done. No more talking. No more playing. I raised the pipe one last time. And then, a gunshot. The last bullet. I froze. Kane jerked. His body spasmed once, twice, then went still. Blood pooled beneath his head. I turned sharply. Ethan was standing behind me, barely able to stand, barely able to lift his arm. But he had. The gun trembled in his hand, the barrel still smoking. His eyes met mine. "He was taking too long to die," he muttered. Then he collapsed. Escape. I grabbed Ethan, my body moving on instinct now, my mind a haze of pure survival mode. The world was blurring around me, my pulse hammering like a war drum in my chest. We stumbled out of the warehouse, into the freezing night air, into the empty streets of a city that had no idea the devil had just died in one of its darkest corners. Ethan could barely stand. I could barely breathe. But we were alive. And Kane was not. The aftermath. They found Kane's body 3 days later. By then, I had vanished. Ethan and I had made sure of it. The warehouse fire was blamed on squatters, the police finding no evidence of what really happened. No record of our meeting. No proof that I had ever been there. Kane's legacy ended in silence. No headlines. No fear. No fame. He was erased. Just like that. Final broadcast. The newsroom was in chaos. I stood in front of the cameras one last time, my suit wrinkled, my hands shaking slightly as I adjusted my tie. The studio director was screaming in my earpiece, but I didn't care. I knew this would be my last time on air. I cleared my throat, looked into the camera, and then I told the truth. "The Midtown Massacre was a lie," I said, my voice calm. "I made it up. Every piece of it. Every victim. Every witness. Every so-called tragedy." The control room erupted in panic. Producers screamed. The live feed shook. I ignored them. "But someone saw my story," I continued. "Someone who wanted it to be real." I swallowed, forcing down the lump in my throat. "He called himself Kane. He killed in my name." The newsroom was dead silent. I met the camera's gaze. "He's dead now," I said. "And this is my last broadcast. Then, I walked off set, straight out of the studio, straight into the night, straight into the rest of my life. Epilogue, the ghost of Dylan Mercer. I disappeared, vanished into nothing. The networks tried to bury my final broadcast, tried to scrub my confession from the internet. But the truth was already out there. Kane was dead, but his story would always linger. And so would mine, because the real horror, the real nightmare, the one lesson I had learned through all of this, it's not the killer that terrifies people. It's the idea of him, and ideas never die. The end.